Hello and welcome to the So What podcast, in which political economic analyst JP Lantman discusses the issues uppermost in the minds of South Africans. You can find a written version of this content on JP's website, jplantman.co.za. I am Ruda Lantman and I am your host. Hello, and as always, a very warm welcome to this podcast, which accompanies JP's latest newsletter dated the 17th of June, 2024. And if you look at that date, then of course it has to be elections. But the subtitle is interesting, A Historic Shift to the Middle. JP, you start with a whole list of things that you say did not happen, and which are almost as important as what did happen.
Yes, absolutely. I identified six things that people predicted beforehand with great intensity and certainty will happen in this election, and it did not happen. And you know, Winston Churchill said, if you want to look forward, all you have to do is look backwards. And so if we look a little bit backwards to what did not happen in this election campaign over the last 2 or 3 months, and particularly in the last month, then we learn quite a few things. And the first thing that we learn is that all the predictions about violence did not materialize. We had all manner of threats being made from all sides. The Commissariat joined in and predicted how bad will it be. Security groups released all kinds of cautionaries on how people must defend their properties and themselves, and so on and so forth. And in the end, the violence did not really materialize. Also, if you go a little bit deeper and you look at political assassinations, so far this year, and it is now June, so it's only half a year, but so far this year, 11 people have been killed in political assassinations. Last year, that number was 30, and the year before that was 41. Now, are 11 political murders 11 too many? Absolutely. Is it less than 30 and 41? Absolutely. So the violence thing that did not occur and a reduced level of political assassinations, I think, is something to note and to celebrate. The second thing that did not happen was the threat of huge disruptions, either on election day or on the day that the results were announced. Well, again, none of that happened. Quite apart from violence, if we just talk old-fashioned disruption, it did not happen. And once again, it tells us that our institutions are holding, that the majority of our people are actually not the radical kind of rabble-rousers that people predict them to be. The third thing, and probably the most important thing, is the fear that if the ANC loses power, it will cling to power and will not let go. Well, that was proven wrong in quite a spectacular way. Within 2 weeks, the ANC moved from being a majority party to a minority party dependent on other people, other smaller parties, and doing that transition in 2 weeks. It was absolutely quite astonishing. The results were announced on the 2nd of June, and 12 days later, on the 14th of June, the DA and other opposition parties signed a coalition agreement. I think it is something that, again, we take for granted. We think that's the way it should be. But of course, it's not necessarily the way it should be, as we saw in the United States in the presidential election of 2020. The fourth thing that did not happen was that Cyril Ramaphosa was not kicked out by the ANC when the ANC support dropped to 40%. This was widely predicted by a number of analysts and members of the Commissariat. It did not happen. The fifth thing that did not happen was that load shedding did not start or recommence the day after the votes were counted. Now, of course, load shedding can come back. I think that's a given. But give credit where it's due. For 80 days, we haven't had load shedding, and it's not because we burned more diesel. The diesel numbers have been made public. They're well known. They're out there. No, we did not, or Eskom did not burn more diesel. Yet, in fact, they've burned about a tenth of what they burned last year this time. It was a dramatic reduction in diesel burning. And in spite of that, load shedding did not return. So maybe time to take our default cynicism and temper it a bit. And then the last observation I want to make is the polls were not wrong. As polls were published in the election period and results came out and people saw different trends and so on, there were a variety of people that you would expect are actually a bit more, what shall I call it?
Better informed.
Better informed, that's the better formulation. Dismissed the polls and said it's not, it can't be, it's probably wrong and so on. And in the end, no poll got the numbers 100% correct. No poll did that. But the polls did tell us about the big trends. It did tell us about the big breaks coming. And it has transpired in that way. So, Ruda, you can make of these six non-happenings, as I call them, you can make of these six non-happenings whatever you want, whatever you wish. But for me, what stands out is the point I've already made. Most South Africans are not radical. They do not sit on the extremes. They sit in the middle, and all they want to see is a peaceful, at-ease country with itself. And I think we saw that. And the second thing that came out is our institutions are robust. They were attacked. They were threatened. They were put under pressure. They came through with flying colors. And the third thing, I think, which is quite clear, is that we have the capacity in the country to conduct world-quality, global-quality polls, and also, after the first election results come in, global-quality projections of what the final result would be. Most of the projections were absolutely spot-on. And even those that were a little bit shaky in the beginning corrected themselves and gave us a projection very early on in the counting phase, which gave us the final result. And I think that's something that we as South Africans can be proud of.
And if we look at where we are now, which looked so impossible just a day before the election results were announced, you did write about the possibility of a toenadering, a moving closer between the DA and the ANC twice in 2023. Remind us?
Yes, a year ago, 13 months ago, in May 2023, I did a note where I said exactly that I think we need in the country a grand coalition. And I defined a grand coalition as the big parties of the middle, the ANC and the DA, coming together, reinforcing the middle ground. Of course, there were people who didn't like the suggestion. But a couple of months later, in August 2023, I did a follow-up note in which I pointed out the developments that are taking place at that stage have taken place in our body politic, which pointed clearly that we're moving towards coalition territory. So that was in May and in August. And then, of course, in May this year, the actual election result, the fact that the ANC was pushed to 40%, pushed us very firmly into coalition territory. So that is where we are now.
Why the government of national unity rather than a coalition?
I think that was a very sophisticated finesse, if I can use bridge terms, that was played by the ANC. What did the ANC achieve by talking about a government of national unity? First of all, they avoided a binary choice between either the DA or the EFF-MK. The entire world, South Africa, the global media, everybody, when the election results became clear, bought into this binary choice. It'll have to be either this one or that one. And the ANC, which have always been good political operators, sidestepped that binary choice by introducing the notion of a government of national unity. With that, they got the initiative back, they avoided the binary choice, and they were sort of in charge of the process. And that brought the second consequence of the ANC doing that. By inviting people to join a government of national unity based on common values, and then they made predominant the common values are adherence to the constitution, adherence to the rule of law. By putting that up front very strongly, they effectively sidelined or marginalized the EFF and MK, because both those two parties cannot meet those preconditions.
Well, especially MK,
because they're in favor of replacing the entire constitution. But the ANC didn't have to make a song and dance about it. They just put up the precondition, and the other two parties then walked away. So they marginalized themselves, which puts the ANC in a better political position.
You also make an interesting point about how our electoral system actually gave rise to where we're at now.
Yeah, I feel very strongly about that. In 1994, our forefathers and mothers gave us an electoral system which is based on proportional representation, or also called party lists. Now, we did a bit of a survey, and what we found is there are 87 countries in the world with proportional representation electoral systems. And two-thirds of those 87 countries do not have a majority party. They all run along the lines of coalitions. In a proportional system, unlike a constituency system, every vote counts the same. It's very different from a constituency, a first-past-the-post system. So if you live, Ruda, in Mpumalanga, in a rural area, or you live in a city in Cape Town, your vote counts exactly the same. And those votes are all, doesn't matter who you vote for in different part of the countries, it all gets added together for one party or one movement. So everybody is represented in parliament on a basis of an equal weighting of the votes. You cannot get a situation that we had in the UK, for example, as recently as 2019, when the Tories won an election with 45% of the popular vote, but 55% of the seats in parliament. It's a nonsense situation. And so what did the Tories do with their 55% parliamentary majority? They rammed through Brexit. We had a similar thing in South Africa in 1948 when the National Party came into power and started apartheid legislation. The National Party didn't have a majority of votes in 48. They were sitting somewhere in the 40%, but they got more than 50% of the seats in parliament. In fact, the National Party only got a majority of the popular vote 10 years later in 1958. For 10 years, they ruled on a minority of votes, but a majority of seats. Now, that's the nonsense that you end up with in a constituency system. A proportional system is much more representative. That's the point. And everybody gets a bite at the apple, so to speak. So that is the system our founding fathers and mothers gave us. I think it works well for this country. And what it also means, if we look at other countries in the world, I don't think we will soon. I don't think in my lifetime, maybe in young people's lifetimes, we may again see a party with 50% plus one of the vote. But it is the exception. In a proportional system, many parties get votes, and they have to come together to form a coalition government. So I think it's quite a big change that took place in the governments that we elect.
Many South Africans will be quite worried about this, because coalitions at local government level have been disastrous.
Absolutely. You're quite right. After 2016 and 2021 local government elections, when we started getting coalition governments at local government level, things have not worked out well. It was a terrible experience. Why? And I think the answer is that those coalition parties that formed coalition governments in various municipalities focused on the who, not on the how.
In other words, who gets the job?
Who gets the job? Who gets the salary? Who's the mayor? Who's the speaker? Who's the chairman of committees? Who's getting the bigger package? Instead of focusing on how are we going to govern? What are we going to try and do? And how are we going to try and achieve those goals? It's a very big difference. It's a switching of the same letters, who and how, but it's a very different outcome. Now, there's an interesting thing that happened in KZN. About a year ago, the DA and the IFP, Inkatha Freedom Party, signed a coalition agreement for the 13 municipalities in which they had coalition majorities. They ruled the municipality. It's a unique document in South Africa, because what did it do, or what does it do? They started out by saying what their values are. What are the things that they believe in? Constitution, a rule of law, merit-based appointments, evidence-based policymaking. Items like that. Secondly, what did they want to achieve in the 5 years that they formed a coalition government in a municipality? And it's basic things like water, basic services, upgrading of facilities, and so on. And then thirdly, how are they going to do it? And for example, one item in the how-to-do list is that 8% of municipal budgets will be spent on maintenance. Now, that may sound like a very sort of minor point, but in South Africa, our big problem is maintenance. And the fact that these two parties put that into their agreement, and it's part of how they're going to govern, I think is important. So we've got this agreement in KZN, and by all accounts, it is working reasonably well. Now, the national agreement, which was signed by the ANC and the DA on the 14th of June, follow exactly the same pattern. They start with a preamble of where the country is, and I think we can all relate to those descriptions. Then they've got 10 foundational values, and that includes the constitution, rule of law, merit-based appointments, evidence-based policymaking, and so forth. And then thirdly, what they want to achieve. And there they talk about 9 priorities. So this agreement, which has now been signed by smaller parties as well, is about 10 foundational values, 9 priorities. So this coalition government has to work towards that. And that's what they will do over the next 5 years. And I think that's an important break with the chaos that we've seen in the past with local government coalitions.
I think it's important to note that you attached that as an addendum to the newsletter. So yes, people can go to the website and find it.
Yes, they can. Absolutely. It's at the end. It's an addendum. It's quite interesting just to look at those foundational values and priorities. And it gives you a feel that it's not just airy-fairy stuff. It's very practical. It's very real.
But we all thought that those two parties, those two main parties, were so far apart ideologically that they could never sit around the same fire. And the rhetoric on both sides was fiery, to call it that.
Yeah, you're quite right. There's the perception, very widely spread and very widely held, that the ANC and the DA are poles apart. As you know, I've never bought into that. I've always thought that the commonalities between those two parties, they both broadly parties of the middle. They both have their radicals. The ANC has got RDT people. Thanks to Mr. Zuma, a lot of them have left, but they are still RDT people in the ANC. And the DA has got its radicals. But the big critical mass of both parties are sitting in the middle. And I've always held that view about them.
So you don't think that the ANC and the MKEFF combination are better bedfellows?
No, absolutely not. If you look at policy and you're concerned about policy, then there are bigger differences between the DA, between the ANC and MK, ANC, EFF than ANC, DA. Let me give you a few examples. MK is very clear. They want to abolish the current constitution. They want to go back to the old South Africa arrangement where parliament is the sovereign authority in the state. Parliament makes a law, then that is the sovereign authority. Under our Constitution and Bill of Rights, the Constitution is the sovereign authority and it's applied by the Constitutional Court. It's two very different positions. And it's clear where the ANC is coming from. It's equally clear where MK is coming from. They're very much, much further apart than the ANC and the DA on that point. If you look at the EFF, you find a similar thing. The EFF is in favor of all land in the country, all property must belong to the state. And the state will then dish out property, houses, buildings, farms, and so on, to whoever they deem appropriate. The ANC's position is exactly the opposite. The ANC's position is that land is individual citizens have the right to own their own land directly, i.e. they can have title deeds. And that's why you see a constant effort, particularly at election time, where the ANC dishes out title deeds. Very different from the EFF. So, no, those two parties, MK and EFF, are both offspring of the ANC. That doesn't mean they're the same as the ANC. COPE was an offspring of the ANC, and, you know, look where that is. Bantu Holomisa's UDM is an offspring. Look where that is policy-wise. No, I think the reality is, if you look beyond the race, and you say it's not just about where the parties are black, whether they come from a black constituency. If you actually look at policy, those parties are further away from the ANC than what the DA is.
What do you make of talk about a national dialogue? in the near future.
Yeah, that is one of the elements covered in the agreement, that all the parties to the coalition agreement commit themselves to have such a dialogue. So I suspect we will see action over the next year. It's an idea that was launched by Thabo Mbeki just before the election. And the idea is that you try and develop a national consensus between everybody, white, black, old, young, business, labor, employed, unemployed, small business, big business, on where the country must go. It's really an issue of social capital, social cohesion, unity of purpose. Now, this is a noisy country. It's a noisy democracy. We've got many, many role players, many of them punching way above their small weight. So whether you can pull off such a national dialogue, we'll have to see. But that is future music.
So what do you see happening when it comes to appointment, to who gets the jobs?
Well, the president must be, in terms of the Constitution, Section 87, I think, must take office within 5 days of his election. He was elected on Friday night, so it's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So Wednesday the 19th, he must be inaugurated, assume office. That'll take place at the Union Buildings in Tshwane. And then there's no stipulation on by when he must appoint a cabinet, but obviously he must then appoint a cabinet.
And that's his prerogative.
That's his prerogative. There's no time stipulation in the Constitution, but I think the expectation and the political pressure is such that he will move. And there are some suggestions that he will do it by Friday the 21st. Let's see. So that is as far as appointments go.
Indications of who will be in that cabinet?
No, I have no idea. So I can't.
Not even party affiliations?
Well, party affiliations will certainly play a role. In fact, it is in the agreement that although it's the president's prerogative to appoint, he has to give due consideration to the seats that parties got in the national parliament. So it will follow more or less the party composition. I think you can say that. The president can appoint two ministers and two deputy ministers from outside parliament, and we'll have to see whether he makes use of that freedom.
Economic policy? Do you see any changes?
No, I don't see any changes. I think on economic policy, you can summarize it in one word. The word is Vulindlela. Vulindlela is it means opened a way. And this was started way back by the president and way back when Tito Mboweni was Minister of Finance. This unit, Vulindlela, has become a permanent unit inside the presidency, and they've scored significant policy victories. For example, spectrum release, which was delayed for 10 years under the previous president. Eventually, they pulled that off, and spectrum was released, and we've got a new, as you know, a new dispensation. Secondly, energy. Electricity has been turned on its head, driven partly by the crisis with load shedding, yes. But, you know, it's not good enough just to have a crisis. You must also have a way out of the crisis. And that's what Vulindlela gave in electricity. In visa reform, we have seen recently announcements around making visas easier. So Vulindlela has scored a number of important victories. It's an important institution, informal as it is. Now they focused on water, ports, railways, railway infrastructure. Those are the three main areas now where they're focusing. Now, the president has made it clear in a letter which he published after the election, but before his election, in that two-week period, he made it clear that it is absolutely imperative that this program of Vulindlela carries on. It's a program of deep structural reform that will change the country quite fundamentally.
And the DA has also expressed their support, not so?
The DA is absolutely on side. It fits into what they also would like to see. So, yeah, I think the two main parties are not going to jeopardize the implementation of railway reform, ports reform, water reform, and so on.
And then in the last 2 weeks, there was a report from the Bureau for Economic Research at Stellenbosch.
It's a very,
very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Also interesting politically in the fact that the president quoted it by name in his letter. And what did the Bureau for Economic Research do? The researchers there asked themselves the question, what needs to be done to change South Africa from a 1.5% growth economy. 1%, if it's going well, we grow at 1.5. What can we do to change from a 1.5% growth economy to a 3.5% growth economy? And the relevance of those numbers are simply that population growth is 1.8. If you grow at 1.5, you're getting poorer. You're making more babies than what you're creating economy. On the other hand, if you grow at 3.5%, that's almost double 1.8% population growth. Now you're cooking with gas. If you can carry on with 3.5% versus 1.8% for 5 years or 10 years, you really change the country. That's what South Africa did in the first 20 years of democracy. Economic growth far exceeded population growth, and that gave you a substantial period of progress. So what the Bureau for Economic Research found in their work is that if you want to change from a 1.5% to a 3.5% economy, you don't have to do anything new. You don't have to do anything different. We don't need new policies. All we need is a energetic implementation of the Vulindlela program. So that's where economic policy will be after the election.
It was also interesting to hear the references to the National Development Plan over the last while, because the National Development Plan was first published in, 2012?
Yes.
And it seemed to have faded for a while.
Yes.
But it's now being brought, and as you say, the BER now came to the conclusion, we don't need new plans and new policies. We must just do what we said we were going to do.
Yeah. I wouldn't put that much status on the National Development Plan. You're quite right. It has been referred to. It has been referenced more. But I don't think, as you know from the work that I've done at the National Planning Commission, I don't think there's a government-wide
commitment
and embracing of the National Development Plan. So I think Vulindlela is much more concrete. It's much more measurable. It's much more definite. And that's where I'm going to focus my work over the next year or so.
What do you see happening as far as the budget's concerned?
On the budget, I think it's quite clear. I hope, I don't know, but I hope that the current Minister of Finance, Enoch Onogwana, will be reappointed. He's made it quite clear that he's not going to step away from bringing down South Africa's debt to GDP load. In fact, in this current year's budget, the year in which we are now, which will end on 31 March next year, he has penciled in an amount of more than 60 billion as a primary surplus. Now, primary surplus simply means government has more income than expenditure if you exclude interest expense. And it's a vital tool that you need if you want to start breaking down or moving down your debt-to-GDP ratio. We had a primary surplus in this past year for the first time in 15 years. So the minister has done it. If you look back, he's penciled it in for this year. And I think he will stick to that policy. And as the debt-to-GDP ratio comes down, interest rate pressure will come down and in general things will improve. Now, currently, debt to GDP is sitting at about 74%, and the DA has formally proposed to the coalition government that they would like to see a level of 67%. So that's clear where they're standing. So I think there's broad agreement, and that's the way the budget will go.
What happens when there are disagreements, as surely there will be?
Then there are mechanisms written into that agreement between the DA and the ANC, well, all parties to the Government of National Unity, on what must be done to solve disagreements. There's a process of talking, and then eventually the final step is sufficient consensus, and sufficient consensus is defined as 60% of 60% support in Parliament. Now, of course, the two big parties, DA and ANC, make 60%. So that's the way you will move forward. And I think, Rita, what we have to accept, we must now get out of the mindset of having a majority party who can decide alone, and that's the end of the story. You know, but we must also accept that if you're the minority party in a coalition, that doesn't mean you can dictate what must happen. Everybody will have to compromise, and that's when I think the one of the foundational values of evidence-based policymaking is an important point, because when you then have disagreements, you can say, right, let's get in the experts, let's get in the hard data, and see what should shape the decision that we have to make. I'm quite sure the one thing that South Africans are good at, we make a hell of a noise, but once we're in the room, we actually compromise. We've got an ability to make deals. That's how the new South Africa was built. So I'm not too worried about that. There are processes, you work through the processes, you overcome your differences.
Doesn't the phrase sufficient consensus come from 94?
Exactly. And now the phrase is back. It gave us the constitution, it gave us the democracy, and it will play its role now as well in the coalition government.
Might we see movement in local governments before the next local government election, which is what, 2026?
Oh, absolutely. You'll see that before this podcast goes out. We've already seen it. The ANC has recalled that rather suboptimal mayor that was in Durban. He's been kicked upstairs to the National Council of Provinces. He can go sit there in a salary. He's been removed. The ANC mayor of Ekurhuleni has also fired the EFF councillor responsible for finance. He was only appointed a few weeks ago when there was a temporary coalition agreement.
Just for the weekend, eh?
Yeah, it was more or less 2 weekends. And I think you're going to see them much more. I think what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks is that coalition governments across the country, where the ANC and the DA are not working together, but they are in partnership with all kinds of funny small parties, that will be cleared up. You will get coalition agreements between the people who serve in the government of national unity. That means it'll affect Nelson Mandela Bay, it'll affect Johannesburg, it'll affect Ekurhuleni, it'll affect Tshwane, probably eThekwini as well. A number of municipalities, I think, will get onto a new trajectory. And that should make a difference, at least in some local governments.
So in summary, so what?
I think, first of all, it is quite a thing that happened, that the ANC lost the majority that they had for 30 years, that they accepted it, and that they moved to a new dispensation, a new governance dispensation, within 2 weeks. I think that's it's a phenomenal performance. As I've said, it didn't even happen in America in 2020. We will see what happens this year in America. But for South Africans, it's a point of pride and something we can feel very good about. On matters economic, it is quite clear that the middle has been strengthened considerably. This pseudo-warfare, this phony war that we had between the DA and the ANC, which I never bought into, as I've said, that can now be set aside, and you can, like adults, talk about what needs to be done to grow the economy. The third so what is, it would be wrong to say that the DA will stop transformation in the country. That is the general accusation which is against the DA. But if you look at the foundational principles which were signed by the DA, those foundational principles are very clear, that we have a particular legacy in this country, that we have to overcome that legacy, and that requires specific proactive measures. That's also, by the way, not just in this national agreement, it is also in the agreement which the DA signed with the IFP in KwaZulu-Natal a year ago in respect of local government. So it's not a new idea. So I don't see any stop to the process of making the economy more inclusive to black people, taking steps necessary to overcome our past. And I think those two things, much higher economic growth, much more inclusion, that will dominate for the next 5 years. And then I think the big so what is that we've seen a substantial move to the middle. Yes, MK did quite well, and kudos to them. But Julius Malema was cut down, and he moved from an 11% party to a 9.5% party. He must be terribly disappointed. He's been repudiated clearly by the country. MK did well in KZN. I think they've got a little bit of support in Mpumalanga, and they've got one member of parliament in the Free State. So for me, the majority of people in this country actually do not want radicalism. They don't want right-wing radicalism, and they don't want RET radicalism. So there's a coming together in the middle, which I think is absolutely great.
And your last point is there's hope for local governments, which makes me very happy.
Yeah. I think we'll see a reorganization of local government, a political reorganization. Whether that then feeds through quickly into better bureaucratic performance, better service delivery, that we will have to see. But at least, as a businessman has remarked in this case of Johannesburg, fix the politics and then you can start fixing the city. And at least now we're busy fixing the politics. So we may see improvement in the city service delivery as well.
Thank you very much to the listeners. Thank you for your time, for your attention. Enjoy this breath of fresh air that is blowing through the country, and stay warm.
Indeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the So What podcast. If you enjoy this content, please don't forget to leave a review and a rating, and please consider subscribing so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, tell your friends. Remember, you can find a written version of all JP's content at jplandman.co.za.